One-on-One with Regional One Health is your inside look on how we're building healthier tomorrows for our patients and our community. Join us for expert insight that empowers you to achieve a lifetime of better health. Today, we're joined by Dr. Richard Kyle Hayes, a primary care physician at Regional One Health's Harbor of Health. Dr. Hayes sees patients for preventative care, treatment of illness, management of chronic conditions, and more. So he's an expert at answering a question almost all of us face at one point when we're not feeling well. Do I need to see a doctor? Dr. Hayes, thank you so much for joining us today. I'd love for you to start by giving us a little insight into what a primary care provider does and why it's so important to have an annual checkup.
First of all, thanks for having me. Good afternoon. And I'd love to answer any and all your questions. So essentially, what is a primary care doctor? At least for me, the thing that I try to do is it's all about establishing relationship with the patient. What I try to do is cultivate the relationship with my patient, as well as establish the rapport in order for us to build lifelong relationships to optimize healthcare outcomes and improve quality of life. Essentially, things that a primary care doctor can do is review any questions or concerns the patient may have, as well as address any acute problems that they have or any chronic conditions that they have, as well as offer preventative services and screenings that are recommended for the patient's gender and age. In addition, we can refer for imaging studies and do lab work.
Yeah, and you touched on the annual checkup. Why exactly is that so important?
So it is important for every patient of all ages, stages of life, to basically check in with, if it's a pediatric patient, obviously their pediatrician, but if they're over the age of 18 or older, to be seen by a physician typically on a yearly basis, but depending on their age as well as medical conditions they have, it may need to be on a monthly basis, a three-month basis, or a six-month basis. And the reason for this is to one, screen for routine, chronic conditions that can be found on lab work without the patient actually having acute symptoms or chronic symptoms, as well as to follow the United States Preventative Services Task Force guidelines, which recommend certain lab work, as well as imaging studies and preventative services for patients based on gender and age. So the reason that it's so important to see your doctor on a regular basis is because if, for example, if you go maybe 3, 4, 5, or even 10 years without seeing a physician, you might have an underlying medical condition that's being missed or not addressed that might have been able to be treated or prevented if you had gone to a doctor on a regular basis.
Okay, understood. So one of the other things I wanted to ask is, patients don't only see you for annual exams, but they may come in when they're not feeling well. So in general, when do common symptoms actually require a visit to the doctor? Is it based on the impact to their lives or the duration that they're in pain? Talk to us a little bit about that.
That is a great question, and ultimately it depends, and here's what it depends on. Essentially, the patients, obviously, they know their body and their symptoms better than anyone, and that includes the physician they're going to go see. So it's obviously a combination of everything. Specifically, if the symptoms are progressing for days to weeks, as well as worsening in severity to where it's impacting the patient's quality of life or potentially whatever they're wanting to do, whether that be job-related or family-related. Then it's time, especially if they've taken preventative measures or have tried to basically treat it at home, it's most likely time to contact their primary care doctor at that stage if it continues to get worse despite whatever medications or therapies that they're trying at home, and especially if it's interfering with their quality of life, their daily living, and their ability to do their job duties.
Yeah, I think conceptually that makes sense, but it's a slippery slope, right? Because sometimes we're not feeling well, or we have a loved one that isn't feeling well, and we just expect it to get better in a few days. But, for example, I had a cough the other day, and it was getting worse after day two, but then it kind of started to get better, and then it got worse again. So it's hard to know at what point is it a cause for concern. And I guess more broadly, do you have a general rule of thumb around when people should go in to see their primary care provider?
Yeah, so we'll stick with the cough example that you had just provided. So just having a cough intermittently or is not something to be a cause for concern. It becomes a concern if it's associated with other symptoms or if it's worsening. To say maybe you have a dry cough and then over a couple of days you notice that you're starting to spike fevers or you're having chills or fatigue or you're having muscle aches or maybe some headaches along with that. And then you're also starting to cough, maybe some sputum production. Especially another thing is if, say, they start with having a little bit of maybe clear or foamy sputum production with their cough, if it progresses to where it starts to become thicker, foul smelling, or changes in color or thickness are typically telltale signs that we need to come see the doctor.
Yeah. And I suppose related to that, you know, we're living in interesting times where there is a pandemic going on, there's COVID-19. So coughing and shortness of breath and fatigue is probably more of a concern today than it otherwise would be. So what are your general thoughts around how people should look at their symptoms that might match up to them having COVID? And when should they think about actually going in to see someone about it?
So unfortunately, you know, we're all in the midst of a global pandemic. And, you know, we've had the waves of variants and this and that. And that's something that we all have to think about. Luckily, you know, we have multiple vaccinations that are widely available, typically free of charge at your local Walgreens, CVS's, as well as a lot of the doctor's offices. But it's something to keep in mind. And there are some symptoms that are related to COVID, specifically, like you said, the shortness of breath, also fever and fatigue. And then there's some other non-specific symptoms that can look like a sinus infection, a common cold, the flu, or COVID. And those can include fever, chills, headache, runny nose, congestion, cough, maybe some shortness of breath, muscle aches. Specific to COVID would be the loss of taste or smell, but sometimes people with sinus infections can also have kind of overlapping symptoms related to that. And they can also have some nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea. So with those symptoms, it could be, you know, any of those various illnesses that can cause that. With that, it's always best to get screened for everything just to be thorough, especially if your symptoms are worsening.
Finally, what about aches and pains? And I know I'm just going through a list of potential symptoms, but these are the things that people experience every day. And, you know, when we have aches and pains, you know, sometimes we might put like some topical treatment on or a heating pad. But at what point is there a cause for concern where we might want to go to our primary care provider? Do you have any recommendations specifically for aches and pains?
Absolutely. So the most common area that most people are going to experience aches and pains are going to be their lower back. At some point in our lives, the majority of us are going to experience some form of achy pain in our back. Another common side is going to be our knees, our ankles, our wrists, or our shoulders. When it becomes a problem that needs to be evaluated is if you start having a changing in your symptoms where it goes from achy to where it might be sharp and stabbing, or it might be almost like a burning or electrical pain. In addition, if the pain begins to travel to other areas of your body outside of the primary site, in addition to developing other symptoms such as tingling, numbness, or weakness, and especially if there's no underlying trauma or injury to the area or any pre-existing medical conditions in that area, then it most likely is best for that patient to reach out to their primary care physician to either have a telehealth appointment to discuss their symptoms or present to clinic so that they can undergo a more thorough physical examination.
You know, I think the key term that I heard you say was when things worsen in severity. So anytime you are experiencing symptoms that is getting worse over time rather than getting better, that's really a cause for concern and maybe a reason that you might want to go in to see your primary care physician. Is that correct?
Yes, especially if the patient is doing, whether that be taking medications, doing physical therapy, doing activity modification, maybe heat therapy, or other types of treatments that they can get over the counter at your local drugstores or things that they might have read on the internet. If it continues to worsen despite them taking conservative and preventative measures at home, then it most likely is time to contact their primary care physician.
Right. So you actually said something that I was just going to ask you about, reading things on the internet. I feel like all of us today, when we're experiencing anything or we are trying to look after a loved one that's experiencing something, we go straight to InternetMD and we are looking up the different symptoms and we're trying to figure out what it is. I mean, it feels like every time we do that, everything that you have is like critical and fatal. So it can be scary. So what are your thoughts around people referencing the internet to diagnose themselves? And how does that relate to either assisting or making it harder for you to do your job as a primary care provider?
So the age of internet has provided us with almost unlimited access to information at any given time. The majority of people in this country, you know, have a cell phone that has data capabilities with access to essentially anything that they want to look up. When I do discuss my patients maybe doing their own independent internet searches, to basically proceed with caution and also understand that there is going to be a lot of information on there that is correct, but also some incorrect information. Just like you just references, you might have, say, just a common cold or a runny nose, and you might find something on Google that essentially says that you have some form of rare disease that is going to be life-threatening. I would suggest to my patients that essentially take it with a grain of salt with whatever you do read on the internet and basically formulate that and bring the whatever questions or concerns you have to your primary care physician or your nurse practitioner to discuss more thorough. So essentially, I do not discourage my patients from doing any form of internet Googling or their own type of research and informational reading, but just to understand that they might find something that, one, could spike their anxiety or lead to an increased risk of anxiety, but also that there might be some misinformation or something that may not be specific to them or their specific patient case.
Yeah, I think that's well said. So moving on, you know, we already covered a lot of the symptoms and things that might cause a person to come in to see you or see their primary care provider. But, you know, given all of your experience, what are symptoms that you wish more patients took seriously?
Some of the big ones that require either an immediate phone call or presentation to a primary care's office or to the emergency department is going to be specific to chest pain, especially if they have underlying medical conditions, as well as symptoms that we can contribute to potentially having a stroke. So the National Stroke Association, as well as the American Heart Association, has a great little acronym called FAST that they've actually increased to FASTER to look for basically a quick overview for patients that could potentially be having a stroke. That includes facial droop for the F in FASTER. The A stands for arm or leg weakness. The S stands for speech or some type of problem with speech. T stands for the amount of time. E stands for if they have any blurred vision or eye problems or visual changes. And R stands for react. So if patients are experiencing any symptoms along those, they need to either contact their primary care doctor immediately or present to the ER to be evaluated for a potential stroke.
So Dr. Hayes, we've talked a lot about some of the symptoms that might cause a patient to come in to see you, but once they're there, how do you help patients address and manage these symptoms directly?
Essentially, if they're having symptoms that are concerning for a stroke, we're most likely going to call an ambulance or get them to the emergency department to have head imaging, as well as for further evaluation, because if they're within the first 3 to 4.5 hours of having the onset of symptoms, they might be eligible for medications that could potentially abort the stroke or prevent the stroke from progressing to permanent brain damage. Other things that we can do, if it's something that is not immediately life-threatening or limb-threatening, what we can do in say my primary care office is basically perform lab work, have a more thorough discussion to where I can obtain accurate historical medical information on the patient, as well as perform a thorough physical examination to see if there's anything that needs to be addressed or treated. Now, with that, if there is something that's concerning, we can always refer out to a type of specialist if it's, say, related to cardiology or heart doctors, or if it's related to lung doctors, it's something that we can refer. We basically have referrals to essentially every type of subspecialty in the primary care world. In addition, we can order imaging studies that need to be, that are warranted based on either lab work or physical exam findings. And in addition to that, there's medications that we can provide that either address the underlying cause or help to improve the symptoms and quality of life.
Okay, understood. So one of the last things that I wanted to ask you about is kind of this rise of the utilization of urgent care versus going to a primary care physician. It seems like, especially for the younger generation, that they prefer more accessibility and kind of going to a place that they can just get serviced when there's a need, but not necessarily develop that longer term relationship that we talked about earlier that you get with that primary care physician. Do you have general thoughts around this?
So, over the last recent years, there's been pretty significant growth within the acute care and urgent care fields as far as outpatient urgent care clinics, as well as telehealth services that provide similar services. So with the COVID pandemic, there's been an increase in insurance coverage for telehealth appointments, which is fantastic for patients that are concerned about potential sick exposure, as well as those who may not have transportation or the capabilities to get to their appointments. So from that standpoint, it's fantastic. As far as addressing the younger generations wanting to go to urgent care, I believe the underlying cause of that is that the majority of young people, you know, they're usually healthy, they don't have any chronic medical conditions, and they don't really see the need to basically establish care with a permanent and primary care physician who would see them on a regular basis. Typically, when they go to urgent care, it's usually for some type of sudden or acute symptoms or some type of infection that can be addressed and treated quickly and promptly with certain medications. And then it resolves to where the patient does not experience it again, and they don't really feel the need to go to a primary care doctor afterwards. So that's something that's just related to information as well as education to the younger generations, stating that the convenience of urgent care is there, especially because the majority of urgent care clinics are open beyond normal business hours for those that can't get off work or potentially can't make it to a primary care doctor's office that's open normally during normal business hours. So there is utility for both, but I always encourage patients that are following up to always establish care with a primary care physician to establish that relationship, that rapport, as well as to improve overall quality of life and long-term healthcare outcomes.
I think that makes a ton of sense, and I really appreciate your time today, Dr. Hayes. Just before we close, is there anything else that you wanted to share with our audience today?
Absolutely. So another thing that I recommend to my patients, especially in preparation for specific specialty referrals, is that when patients do experience certain symptoms or something that's been going on for a couple of days, a good thing that some patients realize to do, but some patients, it slips their mind, is that to keep a symptom log of the symptoms they're experiencing so we can get a better picture of what's causing their symptoms. And this type of basically symptom log I'm referring to is maybe to see if they can identify any underlying triggers that might be exacerbating or worsening their symptoms. Maybe there's a time of day that they experience their symptoms more often. How long do their symptoms last? Is there anything that makes their symptoms better? Is there anything related to potential sleep deprivation, stress, or any caffeine or alcohol intake regarding their symptoms? And this is something that I try to encourage to all my patients about keeping symptom logs, just because it basically helps streamline their thought process. And in addition, it's something that they can review with either their primary care doctor or a specialty physician, address these symptoms more thoroughly. And these symptom logs basically serve as a great starting point for what could potentially be causing their symptoms so that we can get to the underlying cause and either address it, treat it, or modify activity levels or dietary restrictions and or modifications and lifestyle modifications that can improve their overall quality of life.
Yeah, that's a really good recommendation that I had not heard about before. But, you know, just keeping a simple logbook, I imagine, would give the primary care provider a really good foundation from which they can provide more holistic care, and I imagine ultimately leads to better outcomes. Wouldn't you say, Dr. Hayes?
Absolutely. You know, the memory is fleeting and it's very difficult to remember the specific details, you know, days or weeks removed from when we were experiencing the symptoms. So when we're in the heat of actually experiencing the symptoms, if we can keep detailed symptom log regarding the other things that we just talked about, it paints a much better picture than a patient having to try to recall symptoms they might have experienced days to weeks to even months beforehand.
Well, again, great recommendation and what a great conversation today. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Hayes.
Well, I appreciate you having me on and you have a great day.
That was Dr. Richard Kyle Hayes, primary care physician at Harbor of Health. Harbor of Health is located within minutes of downtown Memphis in Harbortown. For an appointment with Dr. Hayes, you can call 901-515-4200. I'm Prakash Chandran, and thanks for making One-on-One with Regional One Health part of your journey to better health. Join us next time as we cover another topic to keep you on your path to a healthier tomorrow. Stay well.